this makes a lot of sense that this creature could still be around. You know, it's not just like it popped up out of nowhere. There's a good history, a good evolutionary sort of pattern that makes sense that this creature would exist in one way or another.
My guest, Bigfoot Sightings, the book, True Tales from Across America. Jim Willis and Michael Kozlowski, it's a co-author, but what happened was Jim had this ready to go, and he died. And then Michael, out of the blue, a horror writer and also ghost stories and all that, gets a call and says, hey, how about Bigfoot? And you said...
I said, no.
I said, what?
Bigfoot, get out of here. Jim was a great guy. I didn't get to work with him personally. Really known him, you know, more through his writing. Probably, you know, used some of his books for my own research at times. But he was well into the book, had a draft probably, you know, a good, at least 50% complete, the whole outline done. A few chapters were just titles, but clearly, you know, knew where the book was going. So I said, well, let me have a look and see. I'm not sure, you know, how I feel, one, about being a co-author, and two, about, you know, for a couple of reasons, I guess. You know, one, how do I feel about, you know, sharing the fame and glory, right? but also really, like, how do I feel about trying to, you know, be somebody else's voice that, you know, I know at this point that Jim's passed, so... You know, it's not like we can collaborate in real time. You know, I'm going to be speaking for somebody in the afterlife, right? So, looked at his notes and really it was like, well, I could have wrote this. This is, you know, pretty much where I would have went with 75% of it. So I felt comfortable taking it over, and I was honored, humbled that, you know, the family was willing to let me do that. You know, these are no small things, you know, our babies, our writings. So yeah, of course it was an honor and a challenge, but I think in the end, between the two of us, we've produced a pretty good book.
It is, and it's more like an encyclopedia, because you draw from a lot of resources, the science part, the expeditions, the, what was it, Hillary, who went up back in the 50s and decided to go look for the Yeti and came up dry, unfortunately.
yeah, and I think the Hillary one, I think, was a little bit of, from his point of view, I think it was a little bit, I'm going to use this to help my funding. there was, in his original expedition, they found a footprint or some footprints, and the Sherpas that were with him were like, oh, this is the Yeti, and that's kind of his first understanding of the Yeti and what they believed it to be. And then I think it was sort of a, well, hey, you know, besides just looking for a way through the mountains, we also might have this amazing creature to find, which they did not find, but, you know, there were some more footprints, and that really kind of got the ball rolling. And there were some earlier sightings, of course, you know, with native peoples, and even before that period, there would have been an early sighting in California. But the Hillary, you know, is somebody there, all everybody was following at the time, right? All these adventurers going out and doing stuff, and, you know, people living vicariously through them. And so them coming out with stories like that really sort of put it into the public eye.
And then there's more to this. I mean, the indigenous, the background, the lore, the legends that say that this isn't fiction, this is real. It's just the Western civilization mind of it isn't science, so it doesn't exist, and they don't care about that.
Right. Yeah.
No. Whether okay, it's, good.
yeah, whether it's Nepalese, you know, with the Yeti, or, you know, in China, it's the Yeren, and Australia, the Yowie, you know, pretty much every country, you know, has some similar being, some sort of ape-like, man-like creature. Some a little more, less defined, I'll say, like Native American culture, the skinwalkers and things like that, that some people think are related. But yeah, for most of those more ancient folklore legend type stories, we'll call it, tends to be more of a magical creature, a little more supernatural than maybe what, you know, the consensus, I'll say, or the leading theories are today about it being more of an organic being.
I go with interdimensional, and I'm not, for me, yeah, it's what I've experienced. And so I, you know, it's like, I wanted to get this book because I like the broad spectrum that you and Jim pull from. And then Jim is a believer, and he signs off, he opens with that, closes with that, or between the two of you, that's how it's a bookend there of why he's interested, his investment.
Yep.
You know, he wanted this published, and I think you know, you took it on. I'm glad.
Oh, I appreciate it. And Jim, yeah, he, between the two of us, definitely more of a believer. I'm a little newer to the paranormal kind of investigative genre. I have my ghost stories book a few years ago. You know, I've done some investigating, but I write a lot of fiction as well. And I'm an engineer by day, so I tend to be more of a science guy.
Yeah.
You know, it's just how I roll, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, and Jim as well. I mean, I don't want to give the impression that Jim just is, you know, believes whatever he's going to hear, right? He wants to know, he wants the evidence and he wants the facts as much as anybody. I think just he's been in the field longer. He's maybe had more experiences even just, you know, throughout his lifetime that, you know, open him up to belief. And, you know, we spoke a little bit before recording that, you know, my needle has swung a bit more in the optimistic skeptic direction than just, you know, the skeptic. So just through writing the book and some of the research that I've dug up in the process.
Well, there was some stuff I learned about the Patterson-Gimlin film that I wasn't familiar with in the background in terms of them making a movie, a spoof, you know, whatever, mm-hmm. you know, a mockumentary. And so the outfits were there, but the kind of stuff they turned up that actually has continued to feed it where it is unclear whether it is legit or it is fake. And that's the whole point of it, is it is that inability to make a conclusion that says, okay, there's something to this.
Right. Yeah. And the Patterson-Gimlin film itself, like you said, you know, they set out to make a mockumentary. Patterson was always kind of a guy that was looking for something to be famous for. So less than the film itself, which is, you know, inconclusive, like you said, you know, there's people that will swear they see muscle movement and things like that with, you know, enhancements in the video. You know, I've watched those personally. I don't see that. But I can't say I see a zipper either. So,
yeah.
You know, it's somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
But like you said, the process of how it got there, you know, that they were out there making a documentary that, you know, people come out later and say they sold suits and whether that information is true for the people later who could also just be trying to jump on the gravy train, the facts aren't very much in doubt about how they got there, you know, and how the whole thing started and what they were doing to begin with. So, you know, like, well, if they were making a film, kind of like the climax has to be finding Bigfoot, right?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, technically. Yeah.
So that gives me more pause about the film than the film itself.
The thing is, a lot of times when people do these kinds of things and find themselves in the right place at the opportune moment, and they really aren't expecting it to deviate from, you know, their mock to real, I don't know that they could have actually anticipated that this would have turned into what it did in terms of, you know, the legs that it grew.
Yeah, for certain. And, you know, mentioned as well in doing my own investigations and having written the book, being interested in even more, you know, and digging a bit deeper and getting out there in the woods. But what I tended to find while I was researching is that the people who see Bigfoot rarely are the ones that are looking for it. You know, so the ones that go out looking, they're like never finding it. Like almost like, yeah, those creatures feel you coming, and they're like, nah, you know, they tend to appear on accident almost, you know, more than anything else.
Yeah, I followed up a couple of shows, well, two or three that I've done. I was at a place that is known for, which I did not know in advance, Sasquatch area of Oklahoma and Missouri and Arkansas, this whole like little area, triangle area. And I had been invited to go check out some crystals, Board Camp Crystal Mine, Mina, Arkansas. And so that was what my husband and I went down and stayed overnight. It's like, okay, we're looking for crystals. And they said, oh, by the way, this happened overnight. And there's this big log up in a tree, you know, maybe 15, 17 feet up in the tree. And no way, it's like three feet in diameter. This is like a tree in a tree. Okay. And it happened overnight. And there were other people there, so they were also experiencing this. One was a researcher who I also just talked to. Well, recently I had gone back through my files of pictures that we took while we were there. And for me, the focal point of the picture was this dark space kind of in the trees. And I kept looking at that until I saw the recent thumbnail. And I thought, oh my gosh, that's an outline. It's interdimensional. And you can see it always bothered me that there was something there that didn't make sense. And then I started doing a little more research about how our brains work and how there are sometimes so much information, our brain cannot process it. And so we're looking at a big picture and trying to figure out details, and we'll focus, our eyes focus a certain way. Well, that's what happened here, is I'm looking the way I would normally view a photo and not seeing it. When I look at it in the thumbnail, all of a sudden there is an outline, a shape, it's distinct, and you either see it or you don't. And that's why I felt compelled to point the camera in that direction at that time. And then now I have this. And so I highlighted it so that somebody else can say it is or it isn't. But for me, it is, because I was there. And right. I know, you know. So
yeah, I'd love to see that one. And like you said, the brain is weird. And there's a very famous study. It's a film of guys playing basketball.
Yes.
Like five, six people, right? Passing the basketball around. And then you watch the whole thing and they go, did you see the guy in the gorilla suit? And then you watch it, you know, they replay it and see a guy walk right through the middle, right? In a gorilla suit or whatever. And you're like, wait a minute. And you back up and you watch it from the beginning and you're like, because you're thinking, obviously they put that in there.
But, yeah.
You know, after the fact. And then you go back and watch the beginning and you just look for the gorilla guy. Oh my God, he's right there. It's, like, how did I not see this?
Yeah, brilliant.
Exactly what you say.
Yeah.
So what do you think the reason of the log in the tree was?
I think it was a bookmark. I think it was one of those things to say, what do you think of this? Are you paying attention?
All right.
You know, I think those things are that easy. And then not only that, it separates the people who are true disbelievers, skeptics, diehard skeptics, and saying, that's impossible. I don't believe it. I'm leaving now. Thank you.
Right.
Versus the ones who say, I'm signing on. Whoa, what is that? There was more to it than that. There were several places in that area that are designated.
Sure, yeah.
So there's it's a longer story. I've told it before, but that for me, that I was not looking for Bigfoot. I had no intention. And since then, I've had several incidents, more of a telepathic connection, like he writes about with his own experience, where there is a specific sentence, a specific dialogue. It is not my language, not my words. And so for me, that's real. But you also, in the book, you also go into, like, Jeff Meldrum, who has Bigfoot, the casts and the stuff. Sure. He's been studying this for years. Melba Ketchum, who did the DNA research. I interviewed her, and that hasn't been finalized as far as I can tell. They've had all sorts of what she calls interference. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I'll put it that way. Might call a lack of good scientific research.
Evidence.
I find a little less, I don't want to say anything to me.
Well, that's fine.
I think Meldrum's a little more on the right track, a little more, from a guy like me, a little more scientific about the whole thing. I get the DNA evidence is meant to be scientific, but the whole buying of magazine, just the way, it's another sort of Patterson thing, the way it was rolled out more concerned than the actual evidence they're presenting. But I think, Meldrum, of course, legend in the field at this point. And then the earlier, Krantz and the Eden and all those guys, right, the Four Horsemen, people who've spent their whole lives looking and still can't tell you they've seen one, or didn't, during their lifetime. But didn't make them any less of a believer.
No, and that's what I think is so fascinating about it, is the people who are really determined, I'm going to find one, I'm going to bag a Sasquatch or something like that. Well, if you go out with a gun, good luck, because that usually means you're looking for trouble and you will find it.
Right, yeah.
You will find it.
I always question the methods of people who are searching for Bigfoot. Certainly, I wouldn't condone shooting a creature we don't even know what it is. But I mean, it might take finding a body or some really solid DNA evidence to convince people. But going out and, we make these noises, we think Bigfoot, this is their language and this is how they communicate. We go out there and we start howling and whooping and whistling and knocking things together with no idea of what we're saying. If I was in the middle of China, screaming about my book in words that I think sound Chinese, people would just think I'm a lunatic, run as far away from me as they possibly could. So I think it might be detrimental to the cause to go out there with some of the methods that we use. Yeah.
Well, you know, if you do talk with, well, there's something they call habituation. And there's another, I'll throw this out here. On YouTube, there is a fantastic series. And that really gets to the heart of this because they cover a broad spectrum of people who've had sightings, experiences, or who are researchers. A Flash of Beauty is the name of it. And I'll recommend it because it speaks to anyone who has any interest at all in Bigfoot or consciousness and the things that we experience we can't explain. But with that, there's so much, I think, investment in getting something corporeal, in having something, a body on the table, that it misses what the Native Americans have always suggested, that there's more to this and it is interdimensional. And they the Native Americans have experiences on this ground in Mena, Arkansas, where they have come in and they've done their ceremonies and they've done specific honoring of the being that says that we are missing something when we insist on making it some kind of an ape. You know, it just doesn't mesh. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. And I'm definitely going to check out that A Flash of Beauty. I haven't seen that one yet. For me, I'm less inclined to believe interdimensional. I'm in any way am I dismissing anybody's beliefs.
Yeah,
Because I don't know. I just don't know, right? For me, the evidence kind of points more towards something organic. That doesn't mean it couldn't be interdimensional and be organic, certainly. And the more we, you know, learn about, you know, the potential of multiverses and all this stuff, the more interesting that becomes, certainly. But I think there's ways to... A lot of times I feel like not so much the interdimensional, maybe as much as like the alien sort of aspect, you know, that they're somehow related to extraterrestrials and things like that. Some of those arguments to me tend to be ways to answer questions that are difficult, right? Like, why don't we have a body or something like that? Rather than necessarily evidence-based. So I've stuck to what I can, you know, and this is a very simple...
You're on the fence. You're right there on the fence.
It's a very simple sort of, thinking for me, right? Things I can touch, things I can see, things that are tangible, you know, that evidence. That's the engineering me, you know.
No, that's fine. The thing about it is it's different for each person. And that's, you know, that's part of the beauty. It, just because one person sees it doesn't mean the person is next to them or with them will see the same thing.
And for me, with ghosts or anything, I want to believe. I love the idea of magic and wonder and, you know, curiosities in the world. You know, that's what makes it interesting for me. So, you know, the more, you know, if there's fairies and leprechauns and Sasquatch and ghosts and, you know, angels and whatever, great, bring them on. I want to know about them. I want magic.
Well, and I think this one
kind of draws me.
This also seemed to whet your appetite because on the other show, I heard you talk about, well, okay, I'm on board if they're going to go out and search and make plans to go somewhere. And they were going to try and go somewhere where it wasn't known for sightings.
It was Minnesota, I think, to talk about the Ghost Box show. Mm-hmm. You know, getting a little drop there. Ghost Box Radio on Facebook. Yeah, I'm invited out to try to make something happen in Minnesota. I was shocked to find out how many sightings are in the Midwest. You know, you think of the Pacific Northwest. I've been down to the Appalachia area, you know, Kentucky and Tennessee, and did some, you know, very weak investigative processes of my own. But, you know, then to find out that, you know, Michigan is in the top 10 of sightings, I think maybe top 5, if I remember correctly, you know, based on the Bigfoot Field Resource Organization statistics. It's like 300 and some sightings in the state. I was like, I had no idea. You know, and I live right here.
Trees and water.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah. So it makes sense. I travel all over the state and the country and the world for that matter. And Michigan is, all trees and water. Like everything north of Detroit is, you know, up north, as we call it. You know, lots of room to roam, as they say.
Well, it's the thing that we're, I think, discovering is that we haven't really paid that much attention. And so now when more people are talking about it and sharing their encounters and saying, well, this is here and that's there, then you find out, good grief, they're right down the block. And I think that has to do with more people sharing their own encounters or experiences or beliefs or whatever, you know, I think it's made a huge difference.
Certainly. And certainly people being willing to share it. I mean, it's a tough thing, even with ghosts or angels or any of the aliens, you know, people understand the stigma behind making a claim that you've seen something or felt something or whatever. So they can be hesitant to share their story. I think with technology and, you know, social media and things like that, we're much more, it's easier to find your people, right? Yeah. And to find the groups that you can relate to and you can share your stories with, who aren't going to put you down or dismiss you out of hand. Again, then spreads that, those stories, like you said, farther and wider. Sorry, my dog. So that's not a Bigfoot. That's my dog.
A ghost sighting.
Yes, a ghost sighting.
Yes.
It looks very similar to a small black terrier. I'm going to let them out of the office, and they'll probably bark out there for a second.
That's okay. Yeah, I have that. Anyway, yeah, that issue too.
Right. So, anyways, like that, I think it's just with social media and all that, it's out there more, and in all these cases, so it is getting even more attention than before. And it's easier to find your people. It's easier to share your stories. It's easier to connect and go places and meet people and investigate. There's some harms that come along with that as well, with technology, and some difficulties that we'll have going forward, I think. Things like, you know, AI and video and, you know, maybe legislations like that are going to make it even tougher, I think, to say this picture is accurate, this video is real. But then we also have drones and things like that where we can cover more area. So it's going to be, I don't know that it's going to get any easier, but it's going to be a lot more of it. That's my prediction.
I think it'll be a mixed bag. Because the fraud, the potential for that, and then trying to figure out, okay, is this legit? But beyond that, when people experience something like this, a video won't do it. A video, you know, whatever it is, it won't do it. It's when you actually have your own boots on the ground, up close and personal, reality shift. And that makes all the difference in the world. And then, you know, it's like with me, I already know it. For me, this worked. I was not expecting it. Had no clue that was going to even happen. But when I became, I guess, acclimated, introduced, and had that interaction, it was like, oh my gosh, this is real. This is a real thing. And it didn't mean I saw a 10-foot Sasquatch. It meant I had an ESP or telepathic contact, and then they showed me some other things that where I had experiences walking through the trees. There's a place they call the nursery there in Mena, and there are crystals under each tree. The people there didn't do it. They found it, and there are crystals in this. It's like a grid pattern, and going through there and, you know, seeing that they didn't do it, you know, the glyphs in the trees, the kind of tree, the way that they organize these little patterns or shapes or whatever in their tree area. Some places look like it might be just a place where they can stay hidden, so a cover of some kind. And others might be a place where somebody's going to stay for a while. But the reason I go back to interdimensional is that just like ET, UFO, aliens, they're here 1 minute and gone the next. Well, where do they go?
Mm-hmm. Right. Sure. You know, that said, they could just be very good at camouflage and disappearing and hiding themselves. You know, it's difficult to find a bear in the woods. I'm a hunter, you know, really only a deer, but my brother has hunted all over the world. I've done some other hunting in my youth. I'm not really a trophy hunter guy, so I don't do much of it anymore. But, you know, it's not easy to go out there and find even animals we know exist in our populace. You know, to go out and find them just as you watch it. You know, and to find, say, like a bear carcass, you know, it's very rare if you haven't shot it or something. So, again, not to dismiss the interdimensional or alien theory, but I think even beyond that, there's good reason to, you know, understand why we haven't found one or why we don't see one regularly or why they can disappear so quickly.
Well, if someone shows up in your home, you know they're there. All right, because they don't belong.
Right,
we're going there.
Feel it, right?
Yeah, we're going there. Like, we're not going to stand out.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for sure. I thought you were going somewhere else with that, but to the point of somebody in your home, you can really feel it, right? Like, you know,
yes,
you can feel the space is disrupted. You know, somebody's out there, somebody's in my living room. I can feel, you know, or, you know, my dog's behind me watching me. I feel their presence. Mm-hmm. You know? And I think that's, you know, kind of where you're going with some of the,
it's the same,
you know,
thing
being out there in Arkansas, right? Yeah.
Very, yeah, simple. It's the same thing. For what we are learning with this is that our senses need to be a little finer tuned to be able to pick up on some of the nuances when we are in the woods, instead of just being afraid when a tree knocking sound, it's like, uh-oh, right. Whoops, all of a sudden the shivers, the goosebumps, the maybe I should go away. And that's, I've talked to people who, as soon as something like that happened when they were in the woods alone, then their guard went up. And
right.
I remember having PTSD and going to camping in Colorado up by Gunnison and being way out, you know, in the wilderness and not feeling safe because of the PTSD. Uh-huh. And so, and right. I grew up in the country. I was quite comfortable being alone out in the woods. But for some reason at that time, it didn't click. And so, you know, there's that sense of when you feel something is off, then that means that whatever it is in that space, that area, you're not going to pick up on the nuances for the most part.
Yeah. And I think along with that, the, you know, if you're coming into it, and I want to speak from my, you know, own personal experience, if you have that skepticism, it's hard to be open to some of that other stuff, right? You really have to work hard at it. Something I have to work hard at when I do investigations, whether it's ghosts or whatever, that I don't just dismiss things offhandedly, you know, that I'm open to that being real, right? I think because I'm very left brain and right brain, I'm pretty good at it, generally speaking, but it's still an effort that I have to make to be open to, like you said, open to those nuances.
It's an extra filter.
Not just running away.
The filter that you're having to work through is the automatic it can't be, and thinking of all the things that it might be. So you're going down this laundry list of right. things that it could be and ruling that out. In the meantime, the moment has passed. Hello. See you, bye.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's an excellent point. Yeah.
So, but that's it. And so that's how we learn and how we adapt and how we expand our sense of reality by knowing, okay, what's the weakest link? What is holding me back? What is my, you know, where's the filter? How have I made it too heavy or whatever? The ghost thing. It took me a while to figure out in some ways that there were ghosts in my presence, and that when they actually did stuff and I had to figure out that's what they were doing, it wasn't just me. It was a shock. Right. It was a shock. It's like, wait a minute. You know, again, firsthand sure. experience changes things. What I like about the book, though, is that you cover as much as you can. That's why I called it more like an encyclopedia, trying to get a lot of different, for one thing, experiences and perspectives with this, instead of just, it's not just I experienced Bigfoot. It's a how can you experience Bigfoot, and what is it about, and why do they call it Sasquatch? What's, you know, why the different terms? And Sasquatch is actually more respectful.
Yeah, I think so. Of course, the Bigfoot name is really just a newspaper writer who, you know, kind of coined the term, and it took off, and, you know, it's colloquial and it's fun to talk about, and Bigfoot's fun, more so than Sasquatch or Yeti or whatever. But yeah, it certainly is not necessarily respectful, and I'm sure, you know, if we communicate with them in some way, they'll tell us what their name is, right? What do they like to be called? But yeah, we really tried to cover a lot. And, you know, Jim covered a lot of the Native American Yeti stuff. I went maybe a bit further into the archaeological records. You know, he was going down that path. I probably did a bit more of that side of that research. But for me, that's important to know, you know, where these creatures might have come from, right? Let's look at all the options, you know, whether they're descendants of a creature that was here, or even ancient aliens or interdimensional or whatever. The more you can glean of their past, I think the more you can understand their presence. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, so that I felt that was important to really cover as much of that as possible.
Well, I also like, there's a list in here, you call it kind of a Bigfoot Rorschach test, where there are some other films that can be considered a little bit more reputable, or in terms of, you know, authenticity, they might have a little more mm-hmm. legitimacy to them. And I like that, because I hadn't seen all of them.
Yeah, and there's, I'm sure, many that I didn't get to. You know, search Bigfoot on the Bigfoot video on the internet, and it'll be there for a while. Mm. But I tried to, you know, pick the highlights. And, you know, I watched a ton of video. Tried to watch the one, you know, find the ones that seemed the most legitimate, which typically tended to be, you know, the word I'm looking for, sort of offhanded, unexpected, you know, sort of America's Funniest Home Videos sort of thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it just happened to, while I had my camera on, you know. I wasn't looking for Bigfoot. I wasn't filming. I was, you know, watching my kid jump into a lake and I saw something in the background.
All yeah. of a sudden we're all watching,
yeah. You know, this huge creature descend a mountain.
That's more likely, you know.
And that kind of goes toward the film and video and photographs in the first place. And a lot of people believe, especially if you believe it's an interdimensional being, that they have a power, you know, some ability to cloak themselves or to disrupt, you know, technology in some way. So you can't get a good picture. You can't get, you know, a clear video. I don't know if that's just a convenient way of saying I don't have a good video of Bigfoot, but it, you know, it has some legs. You know, there's a lot of people, every one of us has a phone in our pocket these days, and we still don't have a good video. And when we get it, it seems to be grainy and blurry, and probably the next video in your phone is clear as day. So,
yeah,
you know, there could be something to that.
Well, about the photo that I took, I didn't know I was taking a picture of Bigfoot. I thought it was hidden in the trees. And then when I look and it's like, no, it isn't hidden. It's right up there at the forefront. It just, my eyes didn't catch it because it wasn't mm-hmm. something I'm used to viewing. And not only that, I think it was in between. And so, you know, the effect okay. there yeah. was too much for me to even believe after I had the photo for several years. And then,
right.
and then
your brain
saw it.
Just
yeah.
chooses
yeah.
to dismiss it.
Okay. So, you know, I think that's a lot of what we're looking at when we deal with things that are paranormal. All across the board in terms of ghosts and, you know, when a ghost appears, it's this wispy kind of shape inner. Sometimes you see a figure, sometimes you see dust or you see a cloud, and to tell people that's a ghost, well, you know, that cloud is a ghost or in the orb, it's a ghost.
Right.
People are just, people are people.
Right.
Sure. It's like, okay, that's your ghost. That's my orb. The two do not meet. Okay. It's a lens right. flash. It's, you know, this is, you're crazy. So that's why you have to find your tribe. Your tribe knows what you're talking yeah. about because they've been there,
yeah,
done that.
Exactly. And it's, I mean, it's in the name. We should expect it, right? Paranormal or supernatural, right? These are things that are beyond what we're used to. You know, it's beyond natural. It's beyond normal. You know, so you have to figure out how to work within that.
The thing I like at the end of the book is when you include Jim's story. And Jim has now at this point been in the wilderness out where it's nice and quiet. He doesn't have any interference. And so when he hears a noise, it's unusual. And when he has a sense of presence, it's unusual. And there was a rock that he couldn't, there's something about the rock. He kept staring at it and meditating. And then something came to him. And I love this because this is what, for me, these experiences are like. Is you're not really looking, you're open, you're quiet, you're receptive and respectful and saying, what is it I need to know about this?
It was important to me to end the book with Jim's words, first of all, and important to end them with that story. Because once I read that story, you know, this is a person I respect, you know, I don't think they're flighty or crazy or, you know, and I've met some people. Let me tell you.
Yeah.
If you're going to investigate ghosts
yes.
and Bigfoot
yeah.
and things like that,
everybody,
you're
yeah.
going to meet some people that, you know, again, I don't dismiss anybody's stories or their beliefs or, you know, I'm certain that in their heart of hearts, they believe what they're telling, you know,
yes.
whether their explanation is accurate or not, they believe what they're telling. But you meet some people and you go, yeah, probably not going to use that one for a reference.
Maybe not. Yeah. I know.
Right. Yeah. But Jim, you know, one of the most, you know, down to earth, you know, intelligent, well-rounded people I know of, you know, and he doesn't say outright that it was Bigfoot, right? He
yeah.
you know, just this yeah. is what he felt. This is what spurred him to investigate further.
It's the details,
you know,
that he includes. The way he
yeah.
tells
yeah.
the story, the specifics of how it plays out, the details are that tells the story. You don't have to say, I mm-hmm. saw Bigfoot. It's just all of these other
right.
little factors are part of it. And that, I think, is what people need to understand, is that when you have those elements and they click, you have your story. Whether it's Bigfoot, doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to anybody else but you connecting your own dots and saying, is this something I can identify or I can align with? Because then you have a template for what it can be for yourself. And that's how I view these stories is, wow, can I work with that? Does that resonate? And you go forward.
Right. Yeah, and especially, you know, as you apply those stories of Bigfoot to the Native American stories and compare those things and, you know, legends and oral tradition that's been around for thousands of years, you know, and matches up with the things you hear today, right? So it's not like it's changed. It's not like it's a different creature. You know, you can go back and say, wow, this, you know, Indian had this, the Native American had the same experience that I had, you know, this Nepalese person, this Chinese person, thousands of years ago, you know, they felt the exact same thing I just felt out in the woods, or that this person who's telling me their story just felt. So, you know, tying those things together again in the book, I think is important so that we don't just believe, you know, oh, well, we got this evidence right now. You know, we could really shoebox ourselves in and say, well, we got some footprints and we got, you know, a couple of videos, you know, some guys up in the woods that had some experiences. You know, that's good. But go back a couple thousand years and, you know, you have all of that ad nauseum, right?
Yeah. The thing is, too, though, you are very versatile because, what, there's a band, there's also the horror writers stuff that you're, you know, the horror stories, the fiction, and the ghost stories, which, I mean, you have a whole lot of, let's say, plates that you're juggling.
Yeah.
Or breaking. I don't know. Probably you know.
A little buff. I have probably a dangerous mix of ADHD and OCD. So I have a million hobbies and I want to know everything about every one of them.
But it's great. It's great because you're versatile. Okay. So you also have maybe a more abstract perspective of, well, here's this, this, and this, and this. And you might be looking at things other people would miss because you are so broad based. Is what I would say. And so
yeah, I think that's accurate. I think there's some truth in that. Yeah.
So when you were thrown into the Bigfoot thing, thinking, well, okay, why not?
Yeah, for sure.
Done everything else.
Exactly.
But most people would say, you know, there's a so far out in the field, when you go to UFO, you think you've missed, you're right there. Okay, I'm on the edge, the fringe, here it is. And then Bigfoot comes in. It's like, no, and you stepped over it.
Yeah. And I mean, Bigfoot's super popular, right? You know, there's a thousand books. You know, mine and Jim's is very possible to get lost in the mix somewhere.
But, yes.
You know, we still approached it with, you know, with all the seriousness and all the, you know, investigative tools that we would bring to anything, whether, you know, whether somebody was telling me that they wanted a history of, I follow this. It's an easy one, but history of, you know, great apes throughout this, you know, throughout our country or throughout, you know, Africa or whatever, things that I know are there. And I'm going to try to figure out where they came from and get all the background I can and explain as much of it as I can. I'm going to do that with Bigfoot as well, or with ghosts, or with whatever the subject may be.
I have several.
Same method.
I have several of the Bigfoot books, and you know, even across the board from the sounds that Sasquatch makes, and you know, the whole nine yards. And people who've experienced Sasquatch and included it in their stuff, and also there are several versions of what Sasquatch is and where Sasquatch comes from. But with this, whether you've got several of those books, this is another great addition just because of what I said. It's more of an encyclopedia talking about it, not only that local stuff, but worldwide and how different cultures approach this entity. And the thing that you add to it is they're just ways of looking at it that maybe if you have a regular Bigfoot book, you haven't discovered. And I discovered that with the army. I think there's one in here, the Mad Mad World you talk about. And that was research in Canada and the United States. And so it's different because you're talking about, at one point I knew that the Army Corps of Engineers had in Oregon or Washington, they had some kind of a little sheet that actually warned about, you know, having encounters with Sasquatch.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Here's how you should act.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're not doing that just as a joke. Well, they could be, right. But there was more to that. And so, you know, when you're talking about military warnings for the people who are boots on the ground, saying, just in case, not that it's real, but you know, it might be.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's plausible enough that they're going to give you a
cheat sheet.
A script of how to react. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that says something. So, but that way, you know, for people who are on the fence, then those little tidbits come in handy because it says maybe you're not as far out there as you think.
Right. Yeah. Well, I appreciate the glowing review of the book. I hope it gets out to many.
And the other thing too, though, is that what I heard in your story, and then listening to another show that you've done and other things that you're saying, is that this actually got your attention. And now you might be less of a skeptic and more of a what if as you have delved more deeply into this subject.
Yeah, for sure. The needle's moved. A lot of that has to do with some of the more research into the past and the archaeological record, and just being able to look at that and say, well, you know, this makes a lot of sense that this creature could still be around. You know, it's not just like it popped up out of nowhere. There's a good history, a good evolutionary sort of pattern that makes sense that this creature would exist in one way or another. And then, of course, you know, people's stories, you know, depending on who they are, you know, can be more or less convincing and you know, draw you in. And I'm still a skeptic. I don't want to, you know, I'm not going to sugarcoat my opinions at all, but definitely my needle has moved to where I'm much more of an optimist that it's in its potential existence than I was before I started, certainly, and much more interested in going out and, you know, either proving or disproving it one way or another.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you wouldn't go out camping in the woods if something hadn't changed.
Right.
So it's okay, sure, I'll go on this little Sasquatch expedition. Why not? That's the thing that's different, though. So is there one story that stood out?
Oh, I've been asked that a couple of times, and I don't really have one great one. There was a story of a camping group, like a youth group. Off the top of my head, I can't remember where it was at. I think it was in the Pacific Northwest, but similar to what I was saying, they were just kind of filming, and suddenly up on this ridge, they saw, you know, a creature walking, and it started kind of moving toward them. And it was always in the distance, and there's video of it, and it's a pretty solid video. There's nothing, you know, you can't zoom in and say, oh, yeah, that's, you know, for sure a Sasquatch or a person, you know, in a fur coat or whatever. But the reaction of the people as they're filming, especially the kids who, you know, and I think that they're teenagers, young adults, their reactions were very believable, you know, not very not staged. You know, you could tell this was authentic. Whether what they were seeing was authentic doesn't really matter. What they believed they were seeing was authentic. And that was the one I think that stuck with me the most.
Okay. And that's what I was curious about, where, you know, where did you jump off the fence for a moment?
Yeah, that one was closely. I mean, even the Patterson Gimlin stuff, even the stuff that, you know, I don't necessarily have as much faith in, is compelling, you know. And you mentioned Dr. Meldrum, he's been all over the place. You know, the more you listen to him, you know, he's not a lunatic, right? Or Krantz, these are well educated guys that are scientists, yeah. Right? They're applying the scientific method to the best of their ability, and I appreciate that. And their science has been enough to convince them that it's real, you know. So all of it kind of combines to go, well, maybe I'm being a little hazy.
See, I'm just seeing you incorporate this into one of your horror stories, all right? Because you've got ghosts, you've got the other horror stories, and I'm thinking, oh, yeah, this is you're on board, but whoa, what am I going to read in the next book?
Right. It could end up. There might be a Sasquatch protagonist in one of my fiction stories. I'm not saying there is. I'm not saying there could be.
I'm not going to rule it out. I'm not going to rule it out. Right. Okay. So your website, because that's where the books and the blog, you're talking, there's some other stuff. I found you on Instagram and of course, you know.
Yeah. I'm a terrible blogger.
I noticed.
There is a blog you can get on my website. Noticed. Every blog starts with, I haven't blogged in 10
right,
months.
Right.
but I'm prolific on Facebook and Instagram and things like that. So, you know, several posts a day.
You
can find my website is www.mikekozlowski.com. So very easy. My first, Mike.
That or Google.
.com. yeah. I'm Michael Kozlowski on Facebook. I think it's michael.kozlowski.79. If you search Mike Kozlowski and look for the profile pictures, I'll be the best looking one. Just pick that one. What else we got? Instagram is at MA Kozlowski. And TikTok, which I'm just kind of starting to play with, is at MA Kozlowski 72. But you can get to all of them from the website. The website's probably the best place to start. There's links there that you can buy, order signed books, my fiction as well. There's links to the Amazon site where you can order directly from there. And then, of course, Barnes & Noble. Hopefully your indie bookshops have it. They certainly can get it in if they don't. So I'm a big indie bookshop guy. So if you support them, go in and tell them you want Bigfoot Sightings by Jim Willis and Mike Kozlowski, and they can have it for you.
Well, I love the book. I think there's a lot here to work with. There's one saying in the chapter, the first teacher is our own heart. So that's where we live. And so if it resonates when you're listening to this and you want to, you know, check something out, the book is Bigfoot Sightings, Two Tales from Across America with Jim Willis and Michael Kozlowski. And the thing I want to recommend again is A Flash of Beauty, because it is excellent. It's a well laid out. There's two versions of it, the paranormal aspect and the normal, if you want to call it that. I think it's all one, but yeah. So, but they also, there's tons of interviews that they've done in terms of checking out people who've had their own legitimate and they believe it is real encounter. And I think that speaks volumes. So anyway, for you too, you know, to work on your horror stories.
Yeah, absolutely. I have it written down. I'm going to be checking that one out. You can reach me in my email through my website as well. So anybody else who checks it out or checks out the book and has questions or comments or just wants to connect, I'm happy to field them all.
Excellent. Well, thank you. I appreciate you taking the time. And the video, what I have in terms of that picture, that photograph, I also posted at Sasquatch Portals and Interdimensionals, the Sasquatch Whisperer, here in my archives. You can check that out. Or the website I've got, talkingtonightlights.com, and that has the picture. I did a before and after and then outlined it. So if you miss it, it's like the gorilla, okay?
Okay.
Literally.
Got you.
Yeah. And then you can see it and unsee it and say, well, I don't know what's there, but, you know, she thinks so. And that's how we're going with it.
The green dress, blue dress.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, gosh. It's like, what? No. Thank you. I appreciate talking to you. And I think you've got some wonderful projects you're working on more now. So happy Halloween. How's that?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, go get yourself a Bigfoot or a ghost book for Halloween or for your friends. We'll love it.
Yes.
I'm still a skeptic. I don't want to, you know, I'm not going to sugarcoat my opinions at all, but definitely my needle has moved to where I'm much more of an optimist that it's in its potential existence than I was before I started, certainly, and much more interested in going out and, you know, either proving or disproving it one way or another.